Hey guys, welcome back to The Next Shot. Today we have a very special guest from Active Health Scottsdale, Joe Cooperman, coming on. He is a chiropractor here in town, extremely knowledgeable. Today's topics were mainly predicated on the recovery aspect and things to help prevent injuries from your golf swing. So I hope you guys enjoy. We had a blast with this conversation. If you do enjoy it, make sure to leave a rating, share it with a friend that will also like the podcast, and enjoy. We'll talk with you guys later. What's going on, Joe? Welcome onto the podcast. We got Joe Cooperman from Active Healthcare up in Scottsdale. Welcome on, buddy. How you doing today?
I'm pretty good. Cool. It's a little hot. I'm doing all right. A little toasty. Surviving, drinking my water.
Yeah. Got to. Thanks for coming down, my man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, you know, sure.
It means a lot to me.
Yeah, man. How's life been since I haven't seen you in a couple months, actually?
Yeah, life's been busy. You know, like, because I think last time I talked to you, we were on the course, weren't we? You're kind of helping me out with my swing and everything.
You came out to the course, and then I came into the office to see you.
You did, yeah.
Okay, and then I saw Nathan. It's been probably a good 3 months.
Yeah, about that. So yeah, things picked up like crazy. So, you know, business has been going in the right direction. Started taking on new endeavors, like starting the podcast as well for Coop Encounters, and then teaching a little bit more here and there for mobility classes, making new relationships with new people that, you know, they're coming out of the woodworks. It's pretty cool. So, you know, reconnected with somebody from back in Sacramento where I was practicing before. I went to the same gym as them. They've been living here for the past like couple years. Totally forgot about that. They reached out to me, and then that rekindled some new things for me.
Awesome.
And that was awesome. So just riding the wave right now.
That's awesome.
Trying to make the wave a little bit larger,
right?
Tidal waves.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So yeah. What kind of, you guys have been hosting, I've seen a lot of like mobility classes you guys have been hosting up at the office and everything like that. How's that going?
That's going really well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going great, actually. I just did one with Lululemon at the Scottsdale Quarter.
Okay.
That was pretty fun. We just kind of went over some like running recovery. Been doing a couple at local CrossFit gyms too, and then having some people come over to Glory Gaines Gym just to learn a couple other recovery strategies, or if they're struggling with like, you know, squat mechanics or deadlift mechanics, we kind of go over those kind of things too. But yeah, it's been going really well and just getting a lot of variety. So it's kind of fun for me to be able to mix it up and not do the same thing over and over again.
For sure.
So I really enjoyed that process a lot more.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What kind of, because running in golf, I've noticed, at least from my body, ankles, hips get tight. Similar to like whenever I run a lot or play a lot of basketball, whenever I hit a lot of golf balls, what's the things you guys do for that recovery, and is it comparable to what you see some of your golf clients do?
Yeah, in general, honestly, the way I approach most recovery things is going, or let's just say stretch therapy that people are going to do themselves. I look at it just from like a mechanic standpoint. Like if your knee needs to go over your toes and it lacks that range of motion, then you really just want to be addressing the things that would restrict it. So whether that's, you know, your calves and your Achilles or your soleus on the backside of the leg there and the lower leg, then you would want to, you know, foam roll, stretch, whatever it might be, especially, you know, it's getting loaded when you're running, but it's also getting loaded when you're swinging a golf club as well. So, you know, like when you're creating that force into the ground, you're contracting your calves.
Yeah.
You know,
it's something you don't really think about too. I noticed when I started running my calves, I definitely didn't stretch them out enough.
Yeah, you might pop up in a swing.
Yeah.
You might feel it, you know, so it's, you know, as far as addressing it, let's say if you're a golfer and you like to go for a run, you know, you might want to foam roll that thing a little bit and make
sure
that
might be the trick.
You're ready for the next day, right? Because if your forces are thrown off, then, you know, with the golf swing, it's just like, man, kind of hyper-reliant on mechanics.
It builds up like the whole chain then, like tight hamstrings, tight glutes, kind of where you get that early extension.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, totally could be. And so I always tell people, like, instead of just guessing what it's going to be, assess it and figure out like where is your discrepancy, you know? So, you know, it's just getting really cool feedback from people that, you know, they're just thinking like, hey, my calves are tight, so I just got to roll my calves, but it might not even be a calf issue.
Yeah.
So just kind of addressing things in that matter and just like opening people's minds and just realizing it's sensations mean a lot, but they don't mean everything.
Yeah.
So
typically that feel or that pain, whatever that's coming from, is most likely being,
it could be somewhere else.
Up or down.
Yeah. It could be either you're overloading it or you're not using it enough. You know, there's so many freaking paths that you can go down to figure out like, why is it this way? But as far as like the classes themselves are going, it's like really well perceived though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. How long have you been doing the classes and training?
So I'm a chiropractor. That's what that's what my license is. And so I have a lot of sports background in biomechanics and everything like that. So I've been teaching those classes for about 5.5 years now. And at one point I was teaching pretty much like every other weekend for about 2 years when I was in Sacramento. So once I moved here, they calmed down a little bit so I could focus on my business, like building that practice up.
Okay. Yeah.
But then I'm slowly getting back into the swing of things because I really enjoy teaching. Like I love it.
Really? So, help educate those others and get them to understand a little bit more what you look for and what you look at. And
yeah, definitely. I think, and with today's world, you know, there's a lot of information out there, but it's really hard for people to sift through, you know, the bullshit.
Yeah.
And so they don't really know the difference between what's right and wrong. They just see and think that's right. And so, you know, I'm kind of trying to be the liaison, so to speak, of, you know, this is great for some people, but you might not be that person. Mm-hmm. So let's go with what your body wants to do versus what, you know, that person on, you know, a YouTube or Instagram video is very capable of doing.
Yeah.
You know, so not all exercises are meant for all.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It's just like the golf swing. There's so many different ways that, depending on stability and mobility that they have, that's going to create different characteristics, whatever it be.
Definitely.
Moving up the chain. Mm-hmm. And I noticed, like, especially going back to like the calf thing, whenever I do like lacrosse ball or roll them out a little bit, my ankles just pop a ton. And then the better, like, you can get ankle mobility, that's like we talked about before, Jack Nicklaus's ankle mobility was so good, and then that's why he used the ground more. He had his club head speed, I saw the other day, when he was 58 years old, he was swinging at 118 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's quick.
With that technology, yeah, he smashed it. They said it was at either Open Championship, or no, it was at Pebble, I don't know. In the wet conditions, he flew at 350.
Dang.
Back in the day.
That's unreal.
Like, he smashed it. He's the longest, straightest. I didn't realize, like, how long and straight he was.
That's a man right there.
Yeah. And he goes, yeah, he used everything that he had.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why they call him the bear.
The golden bear.
I remember I got a golden bear when I was in high school. My brother and I went to, like, Sports Authority when we were playing a lot more golf. And we're like, oh, what's the cheapest club we could buy, right? And I saw a golden bear. It was blue, and it had the golden bear emblem on it. And I was like, yep. This is the one.
Marketing's finest right there.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Sold me. It was like, I remember, it was probably like $79. It was like an old model, and I was like, this is the one I need.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I remember taking that thing on the course and just hitting the biggest slice of my life, like, into the driving range right there at Mesa Country Clubs where I grew up playing.
Actually playing the section championship on Monday there.
Are you?
Yeah.
I love that golf course. Mm-hmm. I know, we just played last week out there.
Yeah, it's a great course.
You got to hit a lot of shots there because the tree lines and everything, that's like growing back in Michigan.
Yeah.
Way different than golf out here. It's all target golf with desert, you know, and just boom. It's like desert, fairways. But going there, you actually have to hit shots.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, and hole four, always go for it.
Was it down the hill?
That dog leg left?
Dog leg left.
Straight one,
yeah. Before the one down the hill. Always go for it.
Yeah, you got to take
fly
it
those trees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fly those trees. You got a 40, 50-yard shot in.
A little short wedge. I know, some course knowledge there.
My dad's best friend, he lives on that green.
Oh, okay.
That's
his
backyard. Backside? Yeah, that's his backyard.
Okay. Yeah, I've almost hit into that backside.
I've hit into it a million times.
He's got like a four-foot wall.
Yeah, I've hit into it a million times. He probably won't listen to this, but he's a total goofball, and you'll probably see him out there with like a sword or something doing some like samurai tricks. Yeah,
that's awesome.
That's great. He's a funny guy. Yeah,
that's really cool. Actually, I had somebody reach out on Instagram that started following me. He's like, I don't actually pay attention to golf or do anything golf, but I like the way you talk about some stuff. And I looked at his Instagram, and he's a samurai dude, and he's like sitting in there taking a bunch of videos, cutting up bottles and all this stuff.
It might actually be him.
It could be.
No, but he's a hardcore golfer. He's really good.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
He's single digit. But yeah, man, Mesa Country Club, what a course. I love it. I haven't played there in like probably – oh, we played when I moved back. We played in November.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good
Did
course.
You play high school golf then?
I didn't. I wasn't good enough to make the team, dude. So I grew up playing. I started when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And typical, you know, white kid from from Arizona, swim, golf, tennis.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was a horrible swimmer. They called me Plummy Joe, and they created like pretty much my own category to swim in. So
what was it, Plummy Joe?
Plummy Joe. That's what they called me. I was so slow. And I didn't like swimming that much. I hated going in the water. I screamed all the time, even up until I was like 9 years old. You know, I just hated it. So we cut swim out, and all I do was just play golf and play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a lot better at tennis than I was golf, but I was more passionate about golf as a kid. I loved playing.
Yep.
And my dad would take us out all the time. Mm-hmm. So Mesa Country Club, bam, we were there every single summer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then and when you were in high school, did you end up playing tennis then? Or what?
Yeah, I played tennis in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I still played golf all throughout high school. It's just like the kids at Chaparral High School were
fantastic.
Unreal.
Fantastic.
Yeah, they're really good
they're
golfers.
They're,
historically, they're an extremely good program.
Yeah, so I would play with my friends that played on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, they're really good.
They're really good.
I shoot in the 90s.
Yeah.
They're shooting, you know, scratch golf pretty much.
Yeah,
they're only 14 years old.
So what made you go into the chiropractic route?
You know, I was kind of in a weird rut when I was in college. I didn't really know where I was going to go with my path. And I thought, you know, I would go to dental school like my brother did. And I got in a little bit of trouble when I was in undergrad my last year. Ended up getting a DUI. And I thought, like, that was the end of the world. I'm screwed, dude. I'm not going to be able to do anything. So I was like, I graduated with a nutrition degree and then came back to Scottsdale, lived with my folks, was working at a gym. And I was kind of doing some, like, mild personal training mixed with, like, random jobs I could do. And I was doing nutrition consulting for new clients at the JCC. And I really didn't like it that much. And then I would wake up in the morning, be a lazy guy, maybe go to the gym, come back home, take a nap, go to work. And it was, my parents hated seeing it. So like one day my dad and my brother just kind of pulled me aside and they're like, what are you doing, dude? Your plan? And I didn't really have one. And they're like, you should go to chiropractic school. And I was like, cool. My grandfather was a chiro, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea. So I started shadowing PTs and chiros because I liked the idea of working with people and being like hands on with them. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, you know, people think chiros are whack jobs or whatever, but that didn't have a whole lot to do with my choice. But what really did was I met a guy who told me, you know, you're going to go through school and you're going to learn a lot and you're going to hear a lot of different philosophies. But at the end of the day, he's like, just do what you're happy doing and your patients are going to love you. Just be a good person and you'll have a lot of freedom. And so every chiro that I shadowed, they all loved their job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were all very mm-hmm. passionate about it. And not every single physical therapist I met was very happy with their situation. Cause the ones that own their own business, just like a chiro, you know, and like a lot of the things were similar. So I didn't really see a huge amount of differences as far as like practice management goes, except for chiros make pops.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. So I was like, I want to do that. So I went to school and just wrote it out from there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's interesting. It's kind of like the golf instruction world too. Where you have schools and stuff, more structured ones, big academies, and then you have your other ones because there's so many different philosophies you have. You learn from all these people, and then you just pick and choose whatever you like.
Yeah.
So you take a little bit of whatever David Ledbetter, Butch Harmon, and then just create your own philosophy.
Yeah, exactly.
So same thing with you guys.
Yeah, and there's so many different ones out there.
You
know, it's like you're going to meet some chiropractors that don't even like put their hands on people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I do energy work. But I'm a chiropractor. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like that's your
healing.
Thing. Yeah.
Like
or you can have a chiropractor who says, well, I don't do any force. So I use a clicker. So that's how they do it. And you know, there's a time and place for everything, you know? And I just kind of stay in my lane and just do my thing.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah. Cause I've seen chiros since I've basically been, I don't know, 12 years old or so.
Awesome.
And I've had them all to ones where they'd manually adjust the head. The clicker, old school, I'd lay down on a machine, and then they'd have the giant clicker, and mm-hmm. now they have the hand one.
Yep.
And then since they came out here, they'd go on the roller beds mm-hmm. kind of to get the muscles loose and then adjust. And so there's so many ways. And then putting the one where you cross your hip, your legs over,
uh-huh.
and then kind of like a pretzel, and then they push down, like realigns the pelvis.
Yeah, working on the hips and stuff. The low back. And
yeah, they basically everybody's done everything to me.
It's awesome. What was your injury? You had a
it's been an impinged hip, and then right shoulder too. But
back,
there's three fractured vertebrae that hit in lumbar, thoracic, and cervical just from some accidents.
Okay.
Whiplash from a car accident, and then also a four-wheeling accident where end over end. So I've had body imbalance basically my whole life.
Yeah.
For the most part, and it's just always been. It always wants to divert, go back. Like once I get adjusted, it's good for me a couple of days. But then whatever I do, if I play golf, go to the gym, it always kind of, or just standing in the same spot for a long time, all the muscles would kind of move the skeletal system to the same spot. And it's always tweaked, kind of heads tilted this way, that way. So in college, I used to go each week to this outpatient thing in Midland, so like hour and a half away. Okay. They had readjusted it. Cool. It was good till Sunday. That's like, boom, same thing.
Yeah.
And then we got, that's how I get into TPI, basically, because I want to learn how to fix myself. Yep. And then that's also with golf instruction, too, then I can fix other people.
Yeah.
Learn about the body swing connection. So then I was like, all right. And then I figured out for a while, it's like, if you get your muscles in the right areas, then it controls the skeletal system. Then you can kind of stay more in
balance. Definitely. Yeah, you got to have balance.
Yeah, because I was just always like, I'll just go to Cairo, have them fix me, boom. But then I've learned over time is like, you got to do a lot more on your own instead of just having them reset you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I preach that to basically 100% of my patients.
It's like, you can only do so much.
Yeah, it's chiropractic care. People think they're going to come in, get an adjustment and be like, there it is. It's all done. Yeah. You know, like,
I feel great now.
Yeah, you just set my bones, you know. Yeah. It's like, yeah,
I'm
perfect.
On a plane and then you're screwed.
It's like, man, you're only with them for 15, 20 minutes, you know. Yeah. Like, what are you doing for the rest of the day, the rest of the week, the rest of the next 2 months until you see them again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how often are you stretching? How often are you strengthening the areas that are actually the weak links in your body? How do you move? You know, like, are you a person that likes to deadlift but yet you don't know how to hip hinge? Well, that's a big problem, you know?
Yeah,
and same thing for a golf swing. It's like, if you can't hip hinge, good luck.
Good luck.
It's going to, your back's going to hurt, you know, and if your back's not going to hurt, you're probably going to impinge your hip. So it's just, there's a lot of things that come into play when it's like, it's a tool, you know. It's just part of, like, think of it as part of like the healthcare system. You've got ibuprofen as an option. You've got ice and heat as an option. You have manual therapy as an option, which is a damn good option because it makes really good changes. And people's buy-in can be very fast. So it's like, I tell people, I'm going to work on your hamstring. We're going to stretch it out. We're going to do some things. I'm going to show you how much this is going to help. Then we're going to adjust. And so they get the buy-in, like, yeah, that felt a lot better in my low back just by you working on my hamstring. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, wild, right? Awesome. So stretch your hamstrings a lot more, please. You know, like, or let's strengthen them because this is a weak link. You know, I think it might be a protective mechanism.
Yeah.
So we just kind of, we go after it that way. And usually people are very responsive to that. Sometimes they aren't. Sometimes they think like, just push on me and make everything go away. And it's like,
it doesn't work that way.
You know, I kiss it up to the sky and say, pray to Odin and say, let's hope this works, you know, like.
You know, it worked for a short stint.
It works for a short stint, for sure.
I mean, we'll see it in the golf realm that you can fix somebody's functional pattern pretty quickly in a 30, 40 minute lesson, but that's not going to set in unless they go out and spend a couple hours a week to
practice
and set it in. So it's just like anything you guys do in the chiropractic world. It's like, you set it, now this is your responsibility for the next 3 weeks to work on X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
I know, like, we've talked about that in the past about some of your clients. Definitely. Like, am I going to take the time to write you a plan, or are you going to not do it? And like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Like, this is what I think is going to help you. You're paying me to help you. So let's do it. You know,
take some ownership on it.
Jess, my girlfriend, she works at Lululemon. So that's how I got connected with Kurt.
Okay.
And she hit me with this nice quote last night that was like, this makes so much sense. It was like an Abraham Lincoln quote, I think. And it's something like, if someone gave you 7 hours to chop down a tree, he's going to spend 6 hours sharpening the blade, you know? So it's like
preparing.
Yeah. So preparation for whatever it is that you're going to do. So like, I try to tie it in for my patients. Like, what are we trying to prepare you for? You know, if they don't have any goal in mind, now pain relief is their primary goal. It's like, okay, I have to try to convince them that they need something different.
Yeah.
Like, what is this taking you away from? Golf, tennis, pickleball, I don't care what it is, but whatever it is, I want to get you back to that. So that's how we just sharpen the blade so that you can go back to that 1 hour of work, right? Which is chopping down that tree or playing pickleball or playing golf, you know?
Interesting. So
it was a pretty cool quote. And I was like, I like that, Jess. Yeah.
Jess was stealing that one.
I know.
I'd probably be just sitting there 7 hours trying to chop the tree down.
Right?
just go dull blade.
Yeah. You don't know what you got there. Yeah,
try it out at a different angle. I might be able to get it down.
Yeah. Sitting there and just making it harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
And just beating your head into the wall.
I know. So would you say, like, probably the hamstrings then would be one of the biggest things you look at for golfers?
Actually, the first thing that I assess with a golfer, especially if they're complaining of low back pain, I check internal rotation of the hip at 90 degrees. And then also I'll check it when they're static and just laying flat supine. And so, you know, there's some pretty good studies out there that show that it's a pretty good predictor for low back pain in a golfer. And so I'll check both sides. And usually that'll show me an impinged hip. And so I'd want to work on that so that they can swing around that. Because most likely what happens with that, I would imagine, if I actually assess their swing, then we'd probably see that they're going to rotate in their spine early because they impinge the hip. So you're not going to pinch your hip when you swing. And if you do, you're really good at forcing your own mechanics. And so, we want to open up those angles and not let them close down too aggressively.
Is that where they try and get more like rotation from the lumbar?
Yes.
Part of the spine?
Yeah. So they try to rotate in their lumbar spine.
Yeah.
So trying to teach them a little more lumbopelvic control along with being able to internally rotate their hip with like a without sensation, without pain or tightness, and they just feel nothing or they feel like it's just contracting, then that's usually where we're like, okay, that's a good thing.
That's a good
we're,
one.
We're on the right path. Yeah.
That's
definitely the first thing I check. After that, I just put them in, because I've learned from Greg Rose as well. So it's like you put them in their five iron posture and let's just do an assessment from there.
Yep.
Especially if it's pain during golf. If it's pain outside of golf, everything changes for me. So
what would change in that purpose? Like if it was golf was a pain, but it's also pain in the everyday life, how would you go about that differently than you would just if it was a golf specific pain?
I'd go after standard ranges of motion.
Okay.
Not in a specific position. So mainly just like standing, kneeling, supine, prone, just seeing how well they can like control their body. Because if they can't control those, then I know they can't control a hinge. So
sure, yeah, so, they yeah. can't. Yeah, there's no so way they can do it.
Like
in golf posture.
It's almost like a big waste of time for me to do it.
Makes sense.
I mean, some people want to be like, well, what about my golf posture? I'm like,
it's gonna suck too.
It's gonna suck too. Yeah. You don't got a chance.
Buddy. Yeah, it's like, all right, well, I'll show you real quick. Mm-hmm. Bend over, snap a photo. Not very good.
Not very good.
There's the answer. So, my assessments tend to change quite a bit depending on what people complain of and what their history is. So, like most of my objective findings are going to come off of what people tell me. So it's like, tell me what you're experiencing, and in my head, I'm coming up with the tests that I want to see. I want to see them pass.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So do you do some like FMS testing then too, or
very
like
rarely
any specific ones, or just kind of stuff you've learned?
Very rare. I'll do an FMS, more SFMA.
Okay.
Mainly a movement pattern that they'll tell me that is bothersome. So like I'm not the biggest fan of an FMS anymore. I think it's a really good tool to see standards, but it's, all in the eye of the
beholder. You want to go a little deeper, kind of?
So, yeah, I like to see deeper things. If someone's telling me their knee hurts, I'm probably not going to see a perfect lunge. So, and I don't like to give people scores and let them know, hey, you scored a 35 when you should have been, like a 50. 5 or a 75. It's like, man, let's talk about bringing them down.
Yeah.
It might motivate some people, but I just don't like to do that. I'm like, hey, let's just make this a little bit better, I'd want to see better form out of you. I think it's going to help your knee. And then I make them do it a different way, or I force them to do it a certain way by using a band, using my hands, or coaching them through it. And then they realize like, oh, that does feel different. That feels like it doesn't hurt and it doesn't click and pop. It's like, yeah, cool. Let's do it more like
that.
Let's pour more good movement into the good movement bank account, so I'll assess that way. Main background is going to be coming from like orthopedic testing and specific ranges of motion.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. When I went through TPI in 2015 for the level one and learning the screening process, my first initial instinct was like, man, I can show people how crappy they move and how much better I can make them. Mm-hmm. And then once I started doing the actual screen, I felt like a piece of garbage. I'm like, man, I can't. I have no range of motion in my lat. I have no range of motion in my hip. My left side.
Yeah, this is bad.
Weak.
This is bad. This is bad.
I'm bad at moving. Like, how do I even swing a golf club?
Mm-hmm.
And then going into that thought process is like, if you show that to somebody that's, 65-year-old man that has no internal external rotation in their shoulder, no internal external rotation in their hips, and then you're saying you're going to have over the top, you're going to have early extension, you're going to have chicken wing, you're going to have this
characteristics.
Yeah. All these are possible
it's
in your
golf swing.
And you're going to just...
You're just crushing your ego.
What they'll really do is they'll say, hey, thanks for the information. They're going to go to someone else.
Yeah, see you later. I'm going to go to somebody that actually can help me get better.
Yeah.
And not have to tell me that I got to do 25 hours a week in the gym to get anywhere remotely close to where you'd think I should be able to get to.
Yeah, sometimes doing less is a whole lot more for people.
Yeah. I've noticed when I screen people just briefly on the range, just a quick TPI, they're very conscious of saying previous history if they had something. I'm like, it's going to show up, obviously, you know. If you, then we'll go through a screen, they'll fail the 90-90 on their shoulder. They're like, oh, yeah, I had rotator cuff surgery 3 years ago, but it's good now. Like, well, you don't have the mobility there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the test will show, but people just said, like, consciously they don't want to say, which makes sense. So, like, going back to making the scores on the test, you're like, hey, you should be a 10, but you're actually a 2. So it's just knocking them down more. Then it's like, hey, all right, let's get you a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, always keeping things a little positive, right? Like, there's some light at the end of the tunnel, buddy.
Yeah, it's just not all this.
Yeah, we're going to turn that 101 into a 100.
That's right.
I can guarantee that. So, yeah, no, it's the same thing. I struggle with stuff like that. Early on in my career, I struggled with that, with just telling people what is so wrong with them. But at the same time, that is my job.
Yeah.
It's to tell them, like, hey, there is something wrong. Especially when I come up with a diagnosis where it's like, you know, I had a child who came in recently and he's got a UCL problem in his elbow and he's a thrower.
Okay.
And
what's
it's
UCL?
Like a Tommy John's, right?
Okay.
So right on the inside of the elbow. And for a thrower, that's a devastating injury to have, a sprain of your UCL. And especially at the age of 14, 15.
Yeah, it's fairly young.
It's very early. And so it's like, all right, cool. Here, what do we do? No more throwing. Very simple. Stop throwing. We're going to let this thing heal because every time you throw, it hurts.
It hurts. Yeah.
You know, and you're cranking on this thing.
And you're making it worse.
It's a ligament. Mm-hmm. It does not like that. So stop. And they have to come up with the options of, well, my son wants to play in college. So where am I going to go from here? So being able to relay the fact that there is something wrong with their kid and hammering it home should get someone to stop, you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it actually doesn't.
Yeah.
Whereas with other people, you let them know, like, there's something wrong with them. They're going to be the person that, I can't do that because I have a, you know.
Sure, I got something
disc. Yeah. I have a disc issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I herniated my disc 50 years ago. It's like, oh, okay, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, like, weird.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not symptomatic anymore. You have no numbness, no tingling, no progressive problems. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if they just, like, bent over, hurt, and felt a pop, and they tell me they have numbness and tingling in their leg, I need to be sure to tell them, this is a disc injury.
Yeah.
You need to respect it, or else you're just going to be really jacked up for a while.
For sure.
And you're not going to heal. So it's like bringing them down at a certain time is a very important thing.
Yeah.
But I try, when I have people that are just coming in for mobility issues, I mean, it's all about trying to bring them up.
Mm.
Makes sense. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
They're trying to be brought up. It's like, awesome.
For
sweet.
That.
Yeah, your ankles are a little stiff. We'll make that better.
Yeah. For that kid with the Tommy John symptom, is he a player that typically, that's his only focus is baseball?
He plays basketball every now and then.
Okay.
Yeah. But primarily baseball.
Always interested. We talk about it in a couple of podcasts with a couple other, we had a chiropractor on in our second episode, and then we had Ando from PFS on.
Yeah.
And we just talked about how kids really are getting a little bit more specialized to the almost to a fault.
Yeah, it is.
And then everybody that we've talked to in your realm, and even we see it in the golf realm, that they focus so solely on these things, and it's just causing them injuries and future problems that's going to just destroy them as they get older.
Yeah, being hyper specific about something is not the best option for a child. So an easy way to look at it is, why the Little League World Series was just on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they really, you know, showcase those kids. Look up the numbers. How many of those kids play in the MLB?
That's a good point.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It's a really good point.
Not very many.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably
smaller than 1%.
Yeah, it's very, very small.
And probably all those kids just play baseball too. I'm sure they're not playing.
Oh, it's year round.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. It's a year round sport for them.
They're not playing basketball, football, whatever, getting hockey.
Yeah, and like physiologically, I mean, think about it. You're still growing. Your growth plates are still open, and your body just works differently than a grown ass man.
Yeah.
You know, like you're
fully developed.
You're not 30 years old.
Yeah.
You haven't been doing this sport for, you know, 15, 20 years. You've been doing it for 3, and you're playing as if you've played for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's not that's not advisable. It's, I mean, if you really take a step back, it's not smart.
Mm-hmm.
It seems simple, but it's really just not common knowledge. And so, like, in my eyes, you know, I was trained in it, so it seems easy to me. But I know for the public, they just don't know it. So it's not easy for them. Yeah. They just don't understand. They think, like, well, my kid's special. It's like,
yeah, because there's a lot of juniors.
And I agree, their kids are special. Because this, for sure. I mean, this kid that I had, he's a freak.
Yeah.
He's like 6'3". You know, he's huge. I mean, he can, I told them, because I used to work at St. Mary's College, and I worked with their Division I program, just assessing athletes, treating, helping with rehab, strength and conditioning, so many different variables. And we screened the athletes that were trying to come in. And we would just look at them, watch them move, do some range of motion testing, and just watch their balance, stability, and mobility. And from there, we would determine whether or not we thought that that person was safe to bring onto the program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this person going to cost this school money? And that by injuries, right? Mm-hmm. So we take their history on injuries, and I, you know, make them aware. I'm like, I know that process. You don't want to go down that road. You will not get a scholarship.
Yeah.
You could, like, this kid could literally just walk into a school just because of his size and his athleticism and get a scholarship.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be good at the sport.
It's true.
He's 14 years old and he's 6'3". It's like, it's freaking awesome.
You don't get that.
You were blessed.
No,
buddy.
Yeah, you're blessed. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We had a kid in my high school that was a three-sport athlete, played football, basketball, and baseball. He had played golf a few years as well, but he went from, I think it was our sophomore year, he shot up to 6'6", from like 5'9", 5'8". He just shot up to 6'6", and the kid had an incredible arm, great footwork, didn't lose any of his coordination, but he was a multiverse athlete. He could play anything. And then you see these kids like that, and it's like, you're wasting a lot of opportunities. You could be really good at basketball, too.
Oh, yeah.
6'6". Uh-huh. You could be really good at football. Could be a hell of a wide receiver or a tight end,
yeah.
Especially at 14.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, that's amazing. Didn't lose hand-eye coordination,
mm-hmm.
that going up that much.
Yeah, a lot of guys at certain points in time in their development, if they develop slower and then shoot up later, it seems that they maintain a lot of the athleticism. I don't know if you've noticed that.
I'm not 100% sure, but I would think that it's just mechanics and practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
How you get those mechanoreceptors firing and how much habit you've built.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good way to think about it, because I look at it, my development, and I never was an athletic, like a super athletic kid, but I was skilled. I was able to catch. I was able to throw. I was able to shoot, but I wasn't ever fast. I wasn't ever able to create a lot of speed in that sense. But I was always big. I was always kind of big and kind of goofy. Like, I was a foot taller than everybody else in kindergarten. So I don't know if I just it, that
it's like Shaq just pouncing kids around.
Yeah, kind of. I was a dominant.
Not the
force
fastest, but he's got some power.
Fourth grade, I was the most dominant basketball player in the city. So I was like a foot taller. Than
everybody else caught up.
At the age of 8,
I was 5 foot in third grade.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I was a big kid, and it's just interesting when you see the kids that shoot up at a later age. It just from my experience, it seems like they are able to get a lot of the coordination they were to develop as a smaller individual.
Yeah, you know, I'm a pretty tall person, so I went from 5'6" in my freshman year of college, like going into college, I started to grow, and I ended at 5'9".
There you go.
Yeah,
there
you
go.
So I know so you I can attest to that. My athleticism has always been insanely good. Definitely not the world's best athlete.
Yeah. I mean, you move weight, though. I see you in the gym.
I can move some weight.
That's right.
I found a love for something. Yeah. Found a love for something. I was like, all right, we could do this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I could do a lot of burpees really fast. So I'll just dabble in CrossFit a little bit.
Less distance traveled.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? How long have you been doing CrossFit for?
Since, 2014.
Okay.
Yeah, 2014 is when I started.
You competed at all?
I competed in a lot of local comps. I would travel every now and then to some other places to go compete. And then I would try to get my numbers good enough to be able to compete with the team at our gym to send them to regionals. But I never really aspired to be like, oh, I'm going to go to regionals, man, with the team. Because, I mean, at my gym, those people were monsters. They were freaks. So it's like, if you want to represent the gym well, you send them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm not the guy to send, because I wasn't a strength athlete.
Okay.
I was just the fast guy. And I had pretty decent conditioning. So I could put up a pretty good score to the point that, like, you know, you could see my number pop up with somebody, like, the top right, five going in the up gym there. And maybe help them out to get to regionals. But yeah, I never really wanted to be like, yeah, I want to go on the big show, you know, that kind of thing.
And that's all just tons and tons of working out, right? Like how many workouts would you do a day?
When I was getting more serious with it,
yeah.
Probably training about anywhere from 8 to 10 times a week. I would have a full rest day guaranteed. I would have a day where it was just like a light swim, very light, you know, maybe like less than 10 minutes.
Okay.
And a lot of stretching. But yeah, mainly there were some double days thrown in there. Some of the days it would be what people would consider to be excessive, you know, like a 2.5 hour training session of
okay.
things mm-hmm. that were split up so that you can rest and recover and kind of prepare for a competition. But yeah, it worked out pretty well. I've got injured a couple times.
What was the injuries?
L5-S1, blew out that disc pretty hard. That was my hardest one, I'd say, I had to deal with. Actually, no, I take it back. My LCL was the worst, and I did that during a competition. It was my last rep for the last moment of the day doing burpee, like wall climbs. So you had to hop over a wall.
Oh, wow.
Oh, geez. Do a burpee, and then you crawl over the wall. Mm-hmm. And it was just as many reps as possible. I was with my partner, and we were in the last few seconds. We needed to win it in order to get on the podium. So we're like, we're going ham. And so we went really hard on that very last one. He was flopped on the ground, and I didn't see it until I hopped over and my feet were flying. So I was like, oh, I don't want to land on him. So I moved, landed on just my left leg, and just felt this like weird, sharp discomfort right on the outside of my leg. I was like, ah, that didn't feel good. And man, for a long time, it took a long time to heal that thing. LCLs are really challenging injuries.
Where's the LCL at?
The outside of the knee.
Okay.
And so.
Meniscal? Is it like a meniscus?
No, just ligament.
Ligament.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got your MCL, LCL, right?
Okay.
ACL and PCL. Those are on the inside, but this one's just on the outside of the bones.
Okay.
And you know, that's the one thing that probably pops up the most in my current training.
Interesting.
Is like if I have really high volume squatting, it's going to bark at me a tad.
Okay.
But I kind of know when that's going to happen. Yeah. I can anticipate it. I know the feeling. Yeah. I know when to stop now. So I just kind of back off when I start to feel that. Just do a little bit less. Make sure that my stability is really good. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, I haven't lost anything. It's just volume control, you know?
Yeah. So is like the ankle or the hip fine?
My ankle and hip are fine.
Uh-huh.
I'm stiff.
Gotcha.
I'm not the most mobile there, but there's
just once you get down the stretch, you can kind of feel that the outside of the knee kind of give out.
Yeah, it's more of just like when I stand and shift my weight, I can feel it.
Gotcha.
And so it doesn't happen during the movement; it happens after.
Mm. Left leg.
Left leg.
What do you feel when you actually make a golf motion because of that?
No problems.
Really?
Yeah, no problems.
Interesting. You'd think that going into that, especially that ligament. That
when it's symptomatic, I could probably feel it. But I haven't been golfing like right after I do a heavy squatting. And
That's usually smart.
Yeah, it's usually the last thing I want to do. Yeah. It's like, oh, I can't wait to go like
hit some balls.
Hit some balls when my glutes and hamstrings and quads are just completely fried.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like we have one of the guys at our core set does pretty heavy CrossFit. And it seems, I don't know that much. I'm not educated in CrossFit, but it seems like everything is more up and down and kind of in that plane of motion.
Yeah,
there's no rotational.
It's rare to find it. Yeah, it's funny because I was just listening to the podcast on my way here, and I heard someone say, you know, CrossFit is purely sagittal plane movements. To a certain degree, yes, probably like 95% to 97%. But I mean, you could think about like a single arm carry or a single arm overhead squat. You know, you just change the way that sagittal plane is now acting, right?
Okay.
By having one hand over your head carrying weight and you're squatting up and down. But yes, it is rare to find the times that you're going to see like a side to side motion other than like a box jump,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a big knock on them, but a good training program will prescribe that.
Yeah.
So they'll have their typical WOD that has their, you know, thrusters, wall balls, burpees, and a row,
mm-hmm.
which is all just, you know, sagittal plane stuff.
Yeah.
And then at the end, if it's a good program, they're going to make you do side lunges. They're going to make you do B stance squats. They're going to make you do things that are really out of the ordinary that you would see in like the thing that you need to sweat during. So it's like, I look at it as like, get to fatigue and where's your skill acquisition at?
Okay.
Right? So that's a really good time to train stability is when you are tired.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous time, but it's a very good time. So if you are a skilled, you know, lifter and you can hit pretty good positions, that's probably the perfect time to do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's like I do my Olympic weightlifting programming is basically all based around that. It's let's hit the main lift and now we're going to do accessories.
Okay.
So the main lift might be, let's say, clean and jerks for the day. So from there, since I need to grow my legs and get them stronger, everything's going to be based around the pulling mechanism and sometimes with the squat. And so it's just going to be hammering my hamstrings, hammering my adductors, and hammering my quads in multiple different positions. So whether that's split squatting, side lunging, Cossack squats, or even just like speed work, then you hammer, you're hammering all the different variables that come into play with exercise. Yeah.
Do you use kettlebells in with that?
Of kettlebells.
Mm-hmm. So the reasoning behind that is it more neuromuscular, making sure that you're in fatigue and you're able to fire those certain muscles?
I think that the guy that's programming for me right now is mainly just trying to get me a lot stronger. So a lot of my numbers are, I'm lifting at very heavy percentages for myself. So usually playing around like 70 to 90% on a fairly regular basis. And then when I'm not, I'm down to like 20, 30%. So just like a deload. And it's going to be based off of like trying my best to focus on initiating the movement through my feet.
Okay.
And just really pulling and focusing on like maximum contraction, maximum speed, maximum velocity, and just be really explosive.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So would that be good for like a golf workout once you're fatigued then to do those different types of like lunging and stuff to create more stability?
I think that, with golf, I mean,
because it's rotational and it's not just a...
Yeah, it's not just straight up and down. Yeah, you know, golf is interesting, man, especially because you have people like Brooks Koepka coming out of the Woodworks, who's just like a beast in the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a great golfer, you know? And, you know, there's a lot of, I'm sure we can argue till the end of dawn about what you want out of a golfer. Do you want flexibility? Do you want really good fluid motion? Or do you want super stiffness? So I don't know if you're familiar with a guy named Stuart McGill. But he's like the premier back pain expert, right?
Okay.
He talks a lot about super stiffness in people that need it. And he also talks about fluidity. And so depending on your body type, if you are a mobile person and you tend to operate there, the last thing you probably want to do is make super stiffness if you're a golfer. Because you, like an Ernie Els, for instance, Ernie Els is very fluid, right? He has great range, great movement, and then if you make him go do a bunch of deadlifts, you are now stiffening his core. You're stiffening a lot of things. You're training him to be stiff,
okay?
Because that's how you move the weight. So it's efficient for that, but is it efficient for the golf swing? In his case, probably not. But for someone like Brooks Koepka, who's built more like an oak tree,
that'd be good.
It's good, and fluidity and more range of motion in his spine might actually cause problems for him. Right. So you have to, that's where it gets really tricky.
Yeah. Cause I noticed like Vijay Singh, he just stands out where he's had a fluid motion for years, him, Freddie Couples too. But Vijay seems like he's doing a lot of speed training and stuff. Just what I've seen off social media and things, hitting tires and whatever he's hitting.
Yeah. With maximum effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's probably the smartest way to do it, because it is, the golf swing's not a multiple repetition one after the other. It's more of just, you got one shot. Give it your best effort. And so I think max effort training is probably a really, really good way to go for a golfer.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean like hit one rep maxes all the time, but it means intention of the movement of whatever it is that you're doing. So if you're doing a back squat, it's making sure the barbell is moving at a very rapid speed with good mechanics. Or if you're doing a kettlebell swing, that kettlebell swing better be very nicely loaded, good positions, and then it's ballistic and your arms aren't pulling it up. You're truly using the
nervous
using
system
hips.
Like to fire
harder. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
gets going quicker.
Yeah,
because it's explosive sports where it's like you want to turn it on and off as fast as you can, basically.
Yeah, and that's why like you guys had Andawan. That's why I love what they do over there at Premier Fitness Systems. You know, they have really good, great drills, very unique, and it looks fun. You know, and their drills are not easy. You know, you have
they
to
look
be
challenging.
Pretty, you have
yeah,
to be
the
pretty
bands
balanced.
That they, yeah, move you off anti-rotation, stuff like that. They're always trying to get you into move into different planes to create that stability.
Yep, and they also position people in a certain spot, right? They have they like to create like a really good pelvic control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wildly important with the golf community. It's control the pelvis. Control it. It's definitely it's definitely at top of the list. Yeah. You know, where are we going to go first? Pelvis, and being able to be explosive from that position. So like with the med ball throws that they do, really super athletic capabilities to do with their training. And they're very good at like promoting that. And they're very good at teaching people that. Yeah. So I tell people go to those guys a lot, you know, they're phenomenal.
Yeah. He's an extremely intelligent individual when it comes to that stuff. When we were talking to him, it was pretty cool to learn some of that stuff.
Yeah. They got a lot of good stuff up there. Do you like the speed training with the chains and stuff like that? I've seen like a lot more college golf programs implement that.
Like
going back and forth. Yeah, kind of chains and ropes. And
going
back and forth, kind of like battle rope things.
I mean, yeah, it's good conditioning.
Yeah, more conditioning. Yeah, I just didn't know if that was like really the best way or if it'd be doing like a one rep max at a deadlift or something to get that neurological drive, yeah, instead of just conditioning yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's risk reward at that point, right? So I would think that safety wise, you'd probably be happier playing with a chain and then, you know, risking what can happen with a deadlift. I think deadlifts are wildly healthy for the body. That's how I rehab a lot of back pain. But I also make sure that I have a very close eye on them, that they do learn pelvic control and thoracic control and how to breathe. I mean, a deadlift is not very easy when you break it down. There's so many moving parts. As far as risk goes, I would say, deadlifts probably one rep max is not the option. But an isometric contraction to teach someone how to really maximize their pull, sure, that's a pretty good option. Safe, and it's really hard to do. So that would be like an isolated movement with, let's say, like a barbell, and you pin it up against the rig, and you can't move the rig, you know, obviously, and the barbell's not going to go anywhere, and you just imagine you're deadlifting it. That'll get some neuromuscular control for sure.
Firing, yeah, sure.
Yeah, if you're trying to fire it up, it's a great warm-up.
Yeah, yeah, I tried to do that post-workout, and that's when I threw my back out.
Yeah, that's not a good idea post-workout.
No,
post-exercise.
I figured that out real quick.
I was about a week.
I was... my whole lower back went out, and I was talking to Dr. Jimmy Ewan, and saw him, and he's like, "What were you doing?" And I told him what I did, and I was doing a kettlebell like kind of hold and down at the bottom. He's like, "That's a great primer."
Not a finisher.
Not a good finisher. It's a tough finisher.
If you do that, do some goblet squats because that's why your core turned off, and then when you get fatigued, your hip flexors take over, and your lower back went. So that was a. That was a fun experience. It was during the U.S. Open or not the British Open week. Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't have to. You didn't get to play.
No, I didn't. You missed out. I didn't get to use my my invite.
Right. Sponsor exception. Yeah.
So I spent I spent about 4 days laying on the floor in my kitchen watching my iPad on the ground. Yeah. But yeah, if you don't know what you're doing, that's what I was going to ask you too. Is what are some of the things that you see from the golfing community that you deal with on an injury basis? Is it obviously that lower back is probably one of the things, but what do you see in those players and those people that you deal with that they're doing their practices that is causing a lot of this issues for them? Is it a movement pattern issue? Is it just a poor training aspect thought process?
So I break down everything when someone comes to me especially about their training. I think that sometimes exercise selection does have a lot to do with it. But also, you know, the fact that they're just doing so much repetition and it's rep after rep after rep after rep, especially when it comes to a golf swing. So eventually you get tired and your body can only tolerate so much. So exercise selection has to become really important for someone that's at that level where they're swinging a golf club a couple hundred times a day. It's just like the throwing mechanics, you know, like. Yeah. You can only throw a ball so many times before things start.
It's like not if, it's when it's going to break down. You know,
yeah, exactly. And it's competition, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing healthy about being an athlete. And if anybody thinks that that's like, oh, athletes are healthy, that's just not how it works. If you find a healthy athlete, they're probably not a professional athlete.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. So, you know,
it's like that one picture of LeBron's toes that we were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
His toes are like, it's just mangled.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, who knows? What if that makes him great? Right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you never know. So it's just that there's nothing healthy about competition. The moment you become competitive with something, you're flirting with the sun. You know, your wings are going to melt and you're going to fly. You're just going to crash and burn, actually. You're not going to fly at all.
Yeah.
And so it just becomes a risk management thing. So, you know, like, what is the biggest limiting factor? It's so hard to determine that because everybody is really unique with their presentation. I do think that something that gets overlooked with the golf community is ulnar and radial deviation for the wrist.
Yeah.
How well they can go side to side. And it surprises a lot of people that their elbows are really crushing them. They get golfer's elbow just because they can't either
from
extend.
The
yeah, they either yeah. can't extend their wrist or radially deviate it or ulnar do a good amount of ulnar deviation.
Interesting.
But most professional golfers, if you take a look at that range, it's pretty solid. It usually looks really good. But in the average golfer, it's going to be a
it's
little
gonna
stiff.
It's going to be tight.
Yeah, it's going to be a little stiff.
Yeah, that's huge squaring mechanisms too for the golf club.
And a lot of that too in the amateur golf realm, they hold the golf club poor.
Mm-hmm.
To where it goes into the palm, to where it's more drooped down into the wrist, and they're trying to figure out how to set it. So now the club,
that weight, momentum,
the mass is not allowed to move it properly. The guys that play professionally hold it perfectly in the fingers, where the wrists pretty much are pretty supple in that aspect and pretty smooth for the most part. But the guys that sit there and hold it like this, they're trying to force their wrist. So I would imagine that probably has a lot to do with it too.
Yeah, I would think so too. Yeah, so that's I'll address a lot of wrist issues.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Would you say for the golfer's elbow, because I have a lot of clients that come in and suffer from a golfer's elbow, is it more from lack of, because a lot of them sit with more C posture, internally rotated, where they've been working on computers or for a long period of time, is it more that shoulder? Is it more wrist? Is it a combination of the two? Or is it just kind of going off that individual person?
It's super individual, always. Yeah, mm-hmm. I always say it depends. You know, it just, every case is so unique. You know, you might find someone who is really internally rotated, but the moment that you ask them to, hey, bring your shoulder blades back and then let's see your golf swing, they're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so what if they have perfect mechanics, but yet they still have golfer's elbow?
Okay.
So now where does it go? Now you have to think along the lines of tissue tolerance.
Okay.
Right? So how many reps have you done?
Interesting. Okay.
You know, so it just becomes a breakdown of that. So that's it's a complex approach, but it's also, if you take that step back, it seems pretty simple from the outside looking in. But also horizontal adduction of the shoulder is a pretty big one that I assess for people while they have their shoulder blade retracted.
Okay.
Just to see how far can you bring your arm across your body. And then from there, I'll start to break it down and work my way down to an elbow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But most people are usually going to have pretty decent elbow flexion and elbow extension along with like okay pronation and supination. It varies from person to person, but they usually pass those tests pretty decently.
So like pre-round warm-up, would it be better to do some wrist mobility or like static or dynamic movements, whether it's hamstring, hip, shoulders?
Yeah, you got to hit the big ones, right?
Yeah,
the
big dogs first.
The hips, mm-hmm. Yeah, the hips for sure, I think, are really important. T-spine's wildly important. And then from there, depending on where your body is stiffest, then you go there.
Then you go there.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. I think hip, T-spine is definitely the go-to. And then working your way around to the wrists and the elbows, but usually more dynamic in nature, especially if you're about to go swing. You know, static stretching is static stretching.
Afterwards.
Yeah, afterwards is not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before, you want to get that blood flowing, right? You want to feel loose.
That's probably with all sports, mm-hmm. though, too, right? You'd want to do something dynamic first, and then once you're finished, then do static.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a safer way to do it. If you're going to be doing static stretching before, a lot of people like to static stretch before they do something, but your warm up has to be a good warm up.
Yeah.
It's not just, hey, I'm going to stretch my hips and now I'm just going to go warm up in quotations by squatting a barbell. It's like, no.
Yeah.
It's light goblet squats or air squats. It's, you know, lateral lunges and moving to the side, go for a jog. Now you got the blood flowing. Now you can squat.
You got
to
start priming
everything. Exactly. Prime the movement, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
With this is more for me. With static stretching, do you find because I've been doing a lot more yoga lately myself. Do you find like you get more stiff after doing more static stretching because you're lengthening and kind of breaking apart the muscle?
So that can happen.
Okay.
And that's a phenomenon known as like, I believe it's hysteresis or something like that. Or viscoelastic creep. That's what it is.
Okay.
So imagine you're sitting in the car, right? Your back is always rounded when you're seated in the car, unless you have a lumbar support. But let's just say in this case, you don't, and your back is just rounded. Your butt's tucked under you, and now you can feel your low back just in that little C shape. First thing that happens when you get out of the car is you want to stretch which way? You want to stretch backwards. That's the smart way to stretch. Most people stretch down.
Oh, they go.
They go down because they feel like they need to stretch it out. But that thing has been stretching like the whole entire time.
So you need to go back into this.
Yeah,
position.
So this viscoelastic creep happens, and the body will say, what is going on? Protect.
Interesting.
Tighten up.
Interesting.
Then just, right? So neurologically, you're not going to break through it. But as far as like lengthening tissue, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming out that's showing that, you know, it's really what you're trying to go after is like that the actual muscle at a cellular level. You're trying to go after the sarcomere of length. And a really good way to get after length is by eccentrically loading it. So that would be like an RDL with tempo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so that would probably get people a bigger bang for their buck than just like a old school fashion, just stretch the hamstring out. I think people don't stretch enough because it shows your body a lot of love.
Yeah.
And they don't hold it for long enough. You know, I hear, I do like 30 seconds of this, 30 seconds of that, 30 seconds of this. I'm like, oh, that's not stretching.
Yeah.
Stretching is like, two to three minutes at least, right? Yin yoga.
Yeah.
So like, I'm a big fan of yin yoga.
Okay.
So I'll go to yin where you're hitting like 8 poses total, right?
Mm.
And I mean, after that, I'm like, wow, I'm going to be sore tomorrow.
You're fatigued.
It's a struggle. Mm. You know, it's a mind game at that point when you're in a, you know, child's pose for 5 minutes. It's a long time to be sitting still and learning how to relax. I don't know. It's just, it's what's truly happening with it. I think it's just a rebound effect.
Yeah. Interesting.
And, you know, the body might not just be used to it. So it might take some getting used to. It's kind of like, I look at it the same way as like soreness.
Yeah.
So it's just more of like create the tolerance and then it gets easier and easier and easier. Your body learns the position. It's getting strengthened in the position, right? A down dog is a very active movement.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a passive one. So I'd look at it that way. Whereas if you were doing something a little more passive, I think that you're looking for just a little more rejuvenation and recovery.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is makes nice. Sense. Gotta stretch
that makes
more.
Sense.
Yeah.
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 That
makes definitely,
I think it's so. Okay. I definitely do not stretch enough, that's no, for sure.
But
do some
outside.
Yeah, exactly.
As you probably remember.
Yeah.
Stretch out those
IT man and everything. My girlfriend grabs it. She's like, God damn, you're tight. Like, yeah, it's tight.
Yeah.
It's just constantly like that.
Let's go hit some balls.
Let's go hit some more balls. Let's go put some more attention on that thing.
Yeah.
Well, nice, brother. Well, thanks for coming on today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So where can everybody find you?
So you can find me at my Instagram is activehealth_Scottsdale. I've also got a coop_encounters_podcast. So if you're interested in hearing what we babble about when it comes to health and fitness and everything in between, and I have a website, activehealthscottsdale.com. Reach out, feel free to ask questions, come on in, we'll take care of you. You know, we don't just manipulate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Solve the problem.
We do a lot of soft tissue, we rehab, we do performance care, and it just brings a really modern approach to the healthcare system, I think. So it blows people's minds sometimes.
Yeah, you guys do an awesome job over there.
I appreciate that.
That's cool. Yeah, thank you.
And awesome. You do great, dude. My swing has never been better.
I love it.
Yeah,
right? I've been
practicing with my gripper and everything. I tell everybody, you got to buy one of these grippers. This thing is
don't do that. You're
going to
put me out of business.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but then I also tell them, go see Kurt.
Yeah.
I give so many people your information. And I want them all to reach out to you because, it helped me so much. I started hooking the ball finally in my life.
Look at that.
It's and then I was like, it's been so consistent. I got to get back in with you. So
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
We'll set it up.
Beautiful, man. Thank you.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Thanks,
of course.